The Big Story is brought to you by Scotiabank. For some people, this sounds like a fun night out. For others, it's a chance to dream about hitting a big score. And for some people, it's a trigger that can set off a reaction beyond their control. Those people have a problem and they need help. The question is, what happens if the same sound that sends them down that long dark path also sounds like this to the governments tasked with providing that help? Are provincial governments doing enough to help problem gamblers? And if not, we have to ask, what role does the billions they take in from their losses play in that? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
What's in it for government to actually help those most vulnerable if they are reaping in all of the profits?
Erica Johnson is a CBC investigative reporter based in Vancouver, and along with her Go Public team, she dug into the revenues behind gambling in BC and Canada at large, and the money being made from people who can't help themselves. What is gambling addiction, but more importantly, what does it look like when it represents itself in a person?
Well, gambling addiction, you know, in Canada, they estimate about 1 million people have a gambling addiction or a problem with gambling. And what that means is, you know, most of us can go into a casino or we can buy a couple of lottery tickets a week, not a problem. It's an addiction when it's considered to be causing harm. So you're not making your rent because you're spending it gambling, or it's causing tension with a relationship, or you're not showing up at work because you were up until 4 in the morning gambling. So a lot of people are losing their jobs, etc. That's what they consider to be a gambling addiction. There is, beyond that, a psychological definition, a psychiatric definition called a gambling disorder. And that's a smaller portion of people, but still significant. And those people just find it, they lack the ability to stop gambling. So they are drawn to gamble, whether it's, lotteries, it tends to be casinos, slot machines tend to be very highly addictive. And so a gambling disorder is actually the first behavioral disorder that's been diagnosed by the American Psychiatric Association as something that is recognized and is very problematic.
Did you interview anybody who presents that disorder?
We spoke to a woman who lives in Victoria, British Columbia, Laura Bertuccio, and she says she has a gambling disorder. Now, she also is bipolar, so she's manic. She has highs, she has lows, and you combine that with her gambling issues, and it's quite a scene. You know, she described how there are periods of her life, days will pass by that she doesn't remember. She's in a trance. She will go into a casino. She's addicted, she says, to slot machines. And it's like she's a zombie. She's just zoned in, hooked in by the lights, the sounds, the repetitive nature of pressing that slot machine, and she's gambled away thousands and thousands of dollars. She actually lives on a disability welfare check, so she's not a rich person. She had a job. She injured her back, got a settlement for that, and then gambled away all of that money, about $20,000, over a period of a few months. But she said there was one period that she really doesn't remember much of because she was in this sort of trance. So for her, it's a very scary thing.
Do you have any idea how well this is understood by the average population as a mental health issue?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question. After we did our story, our story online was open for comments, and so people could post what they thought of it. They could also tweet about it, of course. And there was quite a discussion between people who were sympathetic to this person who had this mental disorder, her gambling disorder and addiction. And there were other people who were saying, it's not up to anyone else to control her behavior. She has to show some responsibility for her own behavior. And people were quite savage, actually, on social media and had a lot of critical things to say about her. You know, wah, wah, just, poor you. And then the response to that was, you have to realize that she's gambling because she can't help herself. And so she, in our story, was actually looking for some help to try to protect herself from, you know, sliding into this horrible abyss where she, you know, loses track of time, space, and money.
The government is the one profiting off her gambling, right?
Absolutely. The government and the private lottery corporations.
Of the money that's spent gambling, do we have any idea how much comes from problem gambling or disordered gambling?
Well, that's the really interesting thing. We do know that, a study several years back estimated that of problem gambling, about 3% of the population has issues with gambling, but they account for 30% of the revenues, and most of that comes from casino gambling. So even though they are small in number, people with these challenges, they're contributing huge dollars. I mean, when you look at gambling in Canada, it is a multi-billion dollar industry. Last year alone in Canada, people generated over $17 billion in gambling revenues. And that's everything. That's VLTs, bingo, casinos, lotteries, etc. And we know in BC that it was over $3 billion that people in my province generated by gambling. But then we looked at how much the government spent on problems to help people, on programs to help people with problems, and it was a very, very small figure, 5.6 million. So about 0.4% of all of the money it was getting that had been generated. So of that $3 plus billion that's generated, the government gets about half of that, $1.4 billion. The private lottery company gets the rest. And then, a very tiny amount is spent on trying to help people who have these addictions and disorders.
What does the government say to that, to the idea that they're taking a massive cut without doing much to help people?
You know, it's very controversial. I interviewed the Attorney General of British Columbia, David Eby, and he is actually quite forthright in his interview. And he said, critics are right. We are not spending enough of all of the money we're pulling in trying to help those that are generating a large portion of the revenue. So he committed to spending several million dollars more, which will still be, a drop in the bucket compared to the $1.4
right.
billion that they're bringing in. However, he was acknowledging more needs to be done. People who study gambling and addiction, researchers such as Robert Williams, who is with the University of Lethbridge, Alberta, he says that governments kind of lack the will to help these people with mental gambling issues because they are going to take a hit in the pocketbook. So what's in it for government to actually help those most vulnerable if they are reaping in all of the profits? Perhaps a cynical view, but when you look across the country, you do see that the revenues are pouring in and the amount of money that governments are actually spending on mental health issues is very, very small.
Up next.
Casinos should not be allowed to operate 24 hours a day because no good comes from someone standing in front of a slot machine at 3 in the morning.
That makes sense.
That's not recreational gambling, right?
You can save like never before with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. And right now, for a limited time, you can earn up to 3% interest until March 10th. You can find all the terms and conditions at scotiabank.com/MP. If the government were to up its spending, what kind of things on the ground could be done to help problem gamblers?
The list is long. There was a report done here in British Columbia 5 years ago that had 17 recommendations, very few of those, if any, have been implemented. In our story, the woman that we talked to, Laura Bertuccio, said she wanted something very practical. So she's calling for something called a pre-commitment card that you would use with a slot machine. Right now, if you're a popular player, if you're in there a lot, you have a loyalty card. And it's like an Air Miles card or Aeroplan. You get points every time you swipe your loyalty card in the slot machine. What she wants is the slot machines converted so that they don't turn on unless you swipe that card. So everyone would have to pick up a card when they walked into a casino. And also that the card would allow her to set limits when she's at home and not in a manic state, so she could decide how long she wanted to play the slot machine,
right,
or how much money she wanted to spend. Like, I only want to spend $100 and sort of to save her from herself. And the way that would work is once she hit the slot machine with her card, it would start to track how much money she was putting into the machine. When she hit her $100 limit, it would automatically turn off, and she couldn't use that card at any other slot machine. So that's one idea that she called for. I should say, though, Jordan, Nova Scotia tried this back in 2010 with its video lottery terminals,
okay.
And revenues dropped. People, I guess you could say, their spending was lower, for better or for worse. And by 2014, Nova Scotia had ditched the program. The government at the day said, well, we ditched it because it wasn't popular and it was very expensive to run. Critics say, well, you also lost about $30 million during that time because gambling, fewer people were spending as much money at those machines, which is the intended consequence. So there you see, that's
right.
Sort of, an example right in hand. They put in a program, it hit them in the pocketbook, it no longer exists. I spoke to this researcher, Robert Williams, at the University of Lethbridge, and he had some other suggestions besides the pre-commitment cards. He said things like, casinos should not be allowed to operate 24 hours a day because no good comes from someone standing in front of a slot machine at 3 in the morning.
That makes sense.
That's not recreational gambling, right? There should be daylight and passage of time because a lot of these places, they keep the lighting, whether it's high noon or 10 p.m., it's the same amount of lighting, so you lose track of how much time you've been in the casinos. Things like clocks should be mandatory, again, so you know what time it is. A lot of these places you go in, you have no idea if it's night, day, and that is designed to keep you there and not realize perhaps how much money you're spending. One thing they have that doesn't exist with tobacco or alcohol is this reward system. So those loyalty cards I mentioned, every time you swipe, you get points and you earn more, more time, you can win prizes. Well, when you go to the liquor store, when you buy two cases of beer, you don't get a third one free. So, there's this incentive to keep gambling, which doesn't exist with keep smoking, keep drinking. For some reason, gambling, no one has brought in these measures. It's still seen or portrayed as a fun activity. And, for a lot of people, it is. If you don't have a mental health problem or an addiction, if you spent much time in casinos, I remember a trip to Vegas that I took once, and I saw the same gentleman sitting at a table. I wondered how he went to the washroom, and some people even wear diapers when they are gambling because they don't want to step away from what they're doing. The addiction is that bad. There are programs, exclusion programs, the voluntary self-exclusion programs. So the woman in our story, Laura Bertuccio, she signed up for that and said, I don't want to be in, don't let me come into a casino. Well, during a strong urge, a manic state she was in, she said she walked in at least half a dozen times. Nobody stopped her. Now, whether they didn't recognize her or whether they didn't want to stop her because they don't like to stop people that are gambling, who's to say? But it didn't work. The Fifth Estate, my colleagues at another CBC program recently did an investigation where they sent someone in undercover who was on the self-exclusion program, a journalist who signed up for it, and he had no problem getting in as well. And that was, supposed facial recognition that was supposed to stop people at the door. And, so if you're going to have a program like that, make sure it's effective. A lot of critics say that governments put programs in place that look very good on paper, but are actually ineffective, and that they want the bonus points for being able to say, hey, we're doing something, but it's not actually working.
What kind of blew my mind about this story and why we wanted to talk to you is it just seems like there's this massive conflict of interest in the government that nobody's talking about. Usually people would get really upset at a government if it found out that, it was not taking action to protect people at the expense of making money.
I think that's a really interesting point. On the one hand, people support gambling because, people enjoy it. It's fun for the vast majority of people. Unfortunately, it's because the numbers are so small. Only a handful, the 3% of the population has an issue with gambling. And so, first of all, they don't have a very loud voice. Everybody else is having a good time. So what's your problem? And they're generating a lot of the money. So when government government can say, and here in BC, it's the BC Lottery Corporation, that's the Crown Corporation, they can point to all of the good that is coming from this gambling revenue.
Right.
It's hard to throw it all away, and there is a lot of good. You know, we're talking about the harm that's caused and the people who have addictions and other mental health issues around gambling, but you know, they do a lot of good work, and so I think the whole, it's, you know, not to, you don't want to tar the entire image of gambling, but it helps explain why people largely support it. You know, even at my daughter's school, we accept money from gambling revenues in British Columbia and are able to do things that wouldn't happen otherwise. So, you know, there's, and then, you know, a cynic might say, well, way to whitewash what's really happening with gambling. Now you're getting all the parents and everybody to support, you know, gambling. But it's true that quite a bit of good comes from this revenue. But yeah. On the flip side of that is, you know, if you're going to have it, it should be responsible. And, you know, critics are saying it's just not responsible. It's gotten out of hand in many cases, and you're not doing enough to help those who are being harmed.
Is the solution more money from government to help people being harmed, more education in terms of the fact that this is a mental health issue?
You know, I spoke to a couple of researchers on this front, and they said it's, of course, multifaceted as everything else. The solutions are multi-pronged. What they're starting to do increasingly in provinces across the country is educate consumers, and especially young people. So now you see some stuff happening in schools about addictions, and they're not only talking about tobacco and alcohol and, of course, now marijuana. Gambling is included in a lot of the programming, and so that's a step, you know, telling people that it's not all fun and games, and teaching people warning signs. If you're spending beyond your means, let somebody know. Early intervention, you know, is certainly one step in the right direction.
Have you ever played the slot machines?
Personally, I don't get them. I find them kind of boring. You know, it doesn't do anything for me, but they are clearly very attractive to a lot of people who sit there, you know, hour after hour hitting that button. I went out to UBC to the lab, and the researcher there had us sit down and play a few games just to show how it worked. But fortunately, I was not so inclined to go back and do it again.
Oh.
I consider myself lucky.
Seriously. Thanks, Erica.
Good to talk to you.
Erica Johnson, CBC investigative reporter in Vancouver. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotiabank. You can earn up to 3% interest until March 10th with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. Conditions apply. For more from us, hit us up at thebigstorypodcast.ca. All of our episodes are there, everything you need to get in touch with us. And of course, always on social media, at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Sign up, subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, etc. Rate us, review us, and tell a friend. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.